Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Ryan Dunn.
And I am Steve Marks. Out there, we're having an event around here, and I was recognized from the show, and someone walked up to me and said, "Hey, Ryan, you're doing a great job on the show." I'm Steve, that's Ryan. I'm going to clarify that as many times as possible during the show.
I don't even know how that could possibly have happened.
We look identical.
Yeah. The banner is up everywhere at conferences.
But we don't say the names often enough on the show. That's why people are confused. Well, they hear it once at the top and they forget all about it. They assume when you say, "Hi, I'm Ryan Dunn," that really you mean that I'm Ryan Dunn. I'm Steve Marks, just to clarify, because I just don't get confused. Steve Marks.
Well, Steve.
Yes, Ryan?
Why don't you tell us what we're going to do this week on the show?
Hey, well, that's a great question, Ryan. Ryan, we're going to take a look at the ASP.NET providers in Windows Azure. Mm-hmm. A couple different options that people have for what to use. And of course, we're going to first, you know, look at the news, and we're going to wrap up with a tip about development storage and tables that actually came up in sort of the providers thing that we're doing.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's get started.
Let's do that, Ryan.
Thank you, Steve. Now, the layered architecture sample for Windows Azure, even though it says Azure, but mm-hmm. they mean Windows Azure. This is a project that is out on CodePlex. It's called cloudsample.codeplex.com, and it's derived from a layered architecture sample, which is also linked to in here. And basically, this is just a best practice showcase of different .NET technologies and how to properly architecturally layer your stack, right? And in this case, what they've done is they've taken that layered architecture that was the on-premises version, and they've essentially replicated it for Windows Azure. And there's some pretty interesting stuff going on in here.
And some pretty pictures, which I like.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of pictures as well. So we got web roles, and they mapped the WCF web roles as well, so for the services. Now, one of the cooler things in here is they actually have workflow running. Mm. So you can take a look at how they did that, and they got workflow. You know, this is workflow 4.
So this is a full. This is a code sample plus. This is
it's
like
an actual expense application.
Okay.
As a demonstration of this layered architecture approach, so it looks really cool. I want to dig into this more as well, because some of the things in here I think are just generally applicable to most applications.
Cool. Next up is something I like to call the Archivist.
The Archivist?
Pronounced Archivist, probably.
Can you pronounce his last name?
This is, it's Karsten. So Karsten came up with a post on visitmix.com about this application that he's been working on called the Archivist. And basically what it does is it saves tweets. So the problem being solved here is tweets kind of actually go away after a while because it's hard to search for. You can't actually search very far back in history using Twitter. And so this is an application that runs in Windows Azure that follows a certain search term, mm-hmm. Captures all the tweets by just calling the search API periodically, saves them all, persists them to storage, mm-hmm. And then lets you kind of go back and find those later. Also lets you get statistics about, you know, how popular a term was over time, things like that. Lots of pretty pictures, which, again, Ryan and I are fans of, that Ryan and me, Steve, were fans of the pretty pictures. So this is kind of cool. It's an example. It uses SQL Azure. It also uses Windows Azure Storage. And, of course, it's all running in Windows Azure in web role and some worker roles that are doing some other work. So it actually touches a lot of the platform, does something that's actually useful, and looks kind of cool.
Yeah, I use this actually myself. I put in the search term at Cloud Cover Show, mm-hmm. And a whopping 4 tweets were actually archived. That's everybody.
Over how many days?
I'm going to go last 18 episodes.
Four tweets over the past 18 weeks.
Yeah, most of the people actually who contact us do it over email or the fax line.
Yep.
So
the fax line is open. If you get a busy signal, just try back a little bit later.
Most faxes today will actually retry several times on a busy signal. The newer ones,
it's exponential back off retry logic.
But if you look at the older ones, the thermal papers.
Yep.
Not as often.
That's done. Yep. You can always hand deliver a mimeograph.
Very, very cool. Mimeographs smell so good. Okay. Announcing availability of the Windows Azure App Fabric July release.
Yay. What's new in it?
Well, I'm going to say there's two things. One is they've added support for the RIA services, so that means specifically the cross-domain policy files.
I see. So Flash and Silverlight can now talk to Service Bus because the right cross-domain policy things are in the right places.
Correct.
Cool.
And it also now supports .NET 4.
Which is one better than .NET 3.
Yep. But not as good as .NET 5.
Nope.
They will get there.
Correct.
All right.
So that's cool.
Updated. Oh, that's it.
That's it. Because that's a sneak peek of what we're about to talk to in the feature, which is how to use the ASP.NET providers in Windows Azure. And Ryan here, he's that one, is going to show us first.
Just to be clear, that's me.
That's right. He's Ryan. I'm Steve. Ryan is going to show us the Windows Azure table storage providers,
correct,
right? These samples for that. And then we're going to switch around, and I'm going to show how to do it with SQL Azure.
That is right. So today you can actually get the providers. You can get them in a number of locations. These table storage providers were actually released as part of the very, very first original SDK. So going back pre-PDCs, if you looked in the SDK, they were included. And then what's happened is over time they've actually been updated, and they've gone out and they were kind of pulled out of the SDK, and they were actually now hosted on CodeGallery. So if you go to Code Gallery, you'll find them at CodeGallery or code.msdn.microsoft.com/Windows Azure samples, and you'll find those in there. You'll also find there's been a few derivatives that have been produced to address a few things that have cropped up over time, like changing, for instance, the storage provider from the original sample release to like the shipping version that's actually there right now. So what we have here is inside of Fluffy Photos, which you can download at fluffyphotos.codeplex.com, is we have a modified version of the ASP providers. Those are the ones that were originally shipped in the SDK. They were updated to take advantage of the new .NET classes and also to fix a few problems that we found along the way. Now you can use those. You can use the ones that are in the Windows Azure Training Kit. They ship as well in there in a number of the samples. But anyhow, you're going to find them pretty much everywhere you look in the samples. Now, the easiest thing to do, and what I like to do, is actually just pull it in locally into the project. So I pull in that, I get the ASP providers project here, and that's pretty much it. These things are already set, ready to go. We have the session, the role, the profile, membership, etc. Now, once you do that, you're going to reference this, of course, from your web application. So if we pull down to the web UX, you'll find a reference to the ASP providers in here. And this is going to be automatic, since it's a project reference, this is automatically going to copy local, because these are not GACT clearly, you're going to have to copy these local. And then once you do that, all it is really configuring it in the web config. So if we open this up and take a look, what we have is a few sections in here. I'll just scroll down a little bit. So we have this membership provider section. So what we've done is the table storage membership provider. And this is just standard ASP.NET syntax. So we clear the old ones and add back the table membership provider. You'll notice that we're referencing the local provider here that we have added to our project. And same thing for a role manager. Now, you can actually add a session state provider if you want. That's provided as well. In addition to the profile provider. However, for this particular application, which is Fluffy Photos, we were not making usage of that, so we only enabled the membership and the role provider.
And so for people who haven't used ASP.NET providers before, mm-hmm. let's just give the briefest of definitions of kind of what membership provider and role provider are. Membership provider is for creating users, registering users, handling sign-in, mm-hmm. password recovery.
It's for forms authentication. Right.
Forms authentication, right? And roles, the role provider is for determining what role a user is in, as in, is this guy an admin, or is he a standard user, or
correct,
is he whatever else you've defined for your application, right? And the provider model on ASP.NET says you can plug in anything you want into this. What people commonly use is probably the SQL provider. That's kind of mm-hmm. the default everybody goes down, where all the stuff's stored in a database. Mm-hmm. But you can plug in anything you want. You just have to implement the right interface. So that's what these table providers
right.
do.
For instance, I believe if you use something like Windows Identity Foundation, they probably give you some hooks in here as well to integrate with the built-in provider mechanism to give you that security context. So in the case, if we had this membership provider here, when you did a user.isenroll and all that kind of stuff, you would find that it integrates with that membership system and with the role system as well. And that's just part of this provider model. Other things will actually extend this and can change the behavior of it. But in this case, the integration is simply the fact that we're going to change the backing storage. the functionality itself hasn't changed. So if you're used to forms authentication and how the providers work, there's no new overloads, that we're not delivering a different user principle or anything like that. It's simply the fact that the back end has changed to table storage as opposed to something like SQL, or I don't even know if we might have had file system at some point.
Yeah.
Okay. So what you do is once you declare these providers, the classes in here, the only thing left to do is really to configure a few things. And that is actually done in, it, depending on how you're using the provider, that's actually done in a couple places. You can do it in the web config. I believe there's some overloads in the system configuration as well. And you can certainly do it through code. And let me pull that up. In the controllers, so the controllers that you use to log in, we actually have, let's see here, account controller. And in this, there's a sign-in method for username and whatnot, but there's also a register method, I believe. Let's see, it might be internal. There it is, register. So as part of this, what you're going to do is during the normal process of registering a user, you're going to go in and you're going to grab the membership service, and you can configure this membership service. It's just a well-known interface. And you'll go in and you'll send in the proper parameters. So in this case, when we go register, we're just saying send in these parameters, username, email, password, the confirmed password, and things like that. And then we'll go in and actually, this is pretty standard code, you know, we'll do the create user and then check to see if it was successful. And if it is, then we sign them in, and then we set do the bootstrapping kind of for the application as well. None of this really matters on the provider. However, it's important to note that this is where that gets hooked up. So if you're going to register something yourself, or if you're going to use this, even in web forms as opposed to MVC, you'll see that this is the place that you go use it. You actually need to call out explicitly.
Right.
And then, let's see, once that's done, you pretty much are, that's it. I mean, there's not a whole lot of magic to this. So the provider itself, you know, once it's in and configured, you just let it go. So with that, let's run this and actually see it in action. Hit F5 here and start it up. And now we have it launching here, and we get fluffy photos, right? The first thing you want to do is go in and typically register a user. I've already registered a few users in here, so I'm going to actually just sign in. But if you did do this, or you know, you would invoke that register, and you'd have a new user in the database. But I'll just sign in as a user. So in this case, let's do admin, the super secure password. And then I have views that other people don't have. So I can click new, I can create a new album. You know, I'll create a couple of these. If I log out and sign in as a new user, I can go in and similarly create another album. And you'll notice that the views have changed because as part of this, you know, I don't see anything in here. I have an album, but I need to go upload a picture. Let's go ahead and do that. Let's choose this one. My pics, some title, description, tag, fun. Hit submit. Now when it uploads this, and this is intentionally going to show a picture that's not ready yet because we're thumbnailing it in the background. But once I do this, I have the picture shown here, and I actually have some data. So if I go to the home page, you'll notice that I see this actual album show up. Mm-hmm. Now when I log in as the administrator, I'm going to have some capabilities that other folks wouldn't have, which is I get to see the other albums that might not contain pictures. So typically, you know, for an application like this, you wouldn't show an album that had nothing in it. However, as administrator, I might want to delete this empty album. And that's what I see here in this view. So I can actually administer, delete this user's albums as an admin.
So this is basically proving that roles are working, that when you're logged in as admin, you are actually getting a different view. Yeah. That lookup is working.
Exactly. So if you create more users, that's the membership provider. And every time you go in and log in as an admin, it actually does a check. And the check itself, it's authenticated check. So, you know, any of the actions in this code, for instance, like if you look in the controller like the album controller, any of the things in here that are, let's go ahead and stop this. Any of the actions in here that would be administrative functions, so like delete, mm-hmm. You see this check is enroll admin, or to make sure that the user deleting it is the same user that owns it. So that's how you do that. And in the views and things like that, you might see, you know, these things are limited. For instance, an upload, you know, in this case it says uploads are a post and you have to authorize it, so you have to be logged in order to upload a photo. Makes sense.
Yep.
Right, things like that. So that's pretty much it. Now, the question always comes up is, I want to use Windows Azure Table Storage for this. Is there a benefit to using Windows Azure Table Storage versus anything mm-hmm. else? And the answer is really, it just depends on the application and the workload and the features yep. features you need. In general, these table providers for Windows Azure Storage, they're a really good starting point. You would want to take a look and use them in a production environment for some time, make sure that they fit your requirements, because yep. there's a few things that these things do that might not be obvious. For instance, they don't clear out older session or things right. like that if right. you're using those. So over time, that can build up, and that has a storage charge component. So you're going to want to either automate the removal of that, or you're going to want to at least be aware of how that impacts your application. The other is, depending on the usage of your site, every time you use something like a session provider, it's going to do a lookup into table storage. So there is a transaction cost. Mm-hmm. If you have a really heavy use site, that can add up, obviously. And it might, you know, depending on how much you're doing, it could be significant to insignificant. So it depends. The other option you have, of course, is to use something like SQL Server.
Yep.
And to do that, I'm going to switch places with Steve, and we will take a look at how that's done.
Yeah, let's switch.
Okay. Oh.
All right, so I'm going to take us through, I being Steve, that being Ryan.
Yeah, we did switch places, so I can understand.
It's extra confusing. That's actually going to throw people off. I'm going to take you through the process of how to do this same sort of thing, but with SQL Azure. So using the providers against that. Feel free to use my pen. It's okay. It's better. So I'm going to jump over to the SQL Azure portal, where we're already kind of set up here, and I'm going to create a new database just for this called Providers. And we're going to use that to store our membership role stuff mm-hmm. inside SQL Azure. Now, we've done something bad here, but we do it just for the show. And we've set up a firewall rule that basically lets anyone connect to this. Now, you still need the password, but this
we'll
opens up to
later.
Any IP,
yeah.
IP range. We'll show you the password in a minute so that you guys can do this too. Don't do that. Usually you want to do something like, say, add a rule, and it tells you your IP address, and you can put that in. We do that because here inside the Microsoft corporate network, it's always sort of hit and miss what IP address is going to end up showing there. So we tend to open this big range for demo purposes. Don't do this at home. Okay, so now we have our database set up. We have this provider's database. And now we have to do something custom. So let's look at this page here. This is a knowledge base article that is about how to use SQL Azure to do the providers. And it has mm-hmm. some updated SQL scripts here. And this is because of small differences between SQL Server and SQL Azure. So if you take the off-the-shelf SQL Server setup scripts, the providers are actually fine. It's just the scripts that sort of create the schema and set it all up. Those won't work. The out-of-the-box SQL Server ones won't work with SQL Azure. So you do need to go find this knowledge base article, and of course we'll link to this. And go find the right script. So there's actually a link here that says the modified SQL scripts from here. There's also an executable that you can use to do some of this stuff. We downloaded that stuff already, and so that's what I'm going to use. So I'm going to use LinkPad to let me run those things. So let's add a new connection. Actually, this one might be good. This is the one we tried out earlier. Let's see if we're still connected. Let's refresh and see if that providers thing shows up. So there we go. So I've already set this up. I think we covered this before. We actually did a show where we showed LinkPad talking to SQL Azure and how to do that. So you can go back and watch that if you're not sure how to do it. But LinkPad's a great tool for this.
Well, it's a wizard. it's like add connection.
So it's pretty hard.
Yeah.
The tricky part is to remember that the server name has to be right. The server name, this is the only part I want to actually show here. The server name is this thing, the whole thing, not just this one. But the whole thing over here. So make sure that you're using that and that the username is correct, as you can find if you do the connection strings. You'll see that the user ID is dunreat and then the short version of that server name. So just make sure that those match up. I just open up the connection string, type in the same things. Right. LinkPad figures it out. Okay, so from here we want to run a few scripts. And so I've downloaded these already. We have them here. So we're going to run, I'm going to skip install Azure. That actually creates a database. We don't need that because I just did it in the UI. But I'm going to start with this install common. I'm just going to copy paste it into LinkPad.
Yeah, you want to change it to...
And run it.
You want to change it to SQL there.
Oh. Yep, this doesn't look like a C# expression. Okay, let's run some SQL. Then I'm going to run the next one, which is membership. So the first one just sort of sets up sort of the general things that you need. This next one is specific for the membership provider. And then this last one that I'm going to run is install roles. And that's for the roles provider. So as you can see, not a big deal, just a few SQL scripts you got to run. Once you're done with that, the database should be all set up. So if we look here, we'll see all that. We see a memberships table, a roles table, et cetera.
Right.
There are a few errors here. Cannot grant, deny, revoke permissions. That scared me until I looked back at the knowledge base article and said, hey, you may receive some errors that say cannot grant, deny, but this message can be ignored. So you can just safely ignore that. That's okay. As long as this finishes and you see these tables, I think you're probably going to be in good shape. I haven't ever seen this fail. This just works fine against SQL Azure. Mm-hmm. So now we have a database that's set up. And it's ready for us to use for the membership and roles providers. All we need to do is go back into the code, look in webconfig, and put in the appropriate providers in there.
How do you do that, Steve?
I'm glad you asked, Ryan. I'm going to show you. Let me go to webconfig. Let me bump the font up a little bit so you guys can read this part. But I'm going to cheat here. I've already got these things written down here. So I have a connection string ready to go. I'm going to put that in. Where did this connection string come from? Actually, let's just do it again. We'll go over here to the SQL Azure portal. We'll go to connection strings, copy to clipboard, and paste it in here. The only thing you have to remember to do after that is change where it says my password and actually put your password. Yes, we're going to change this one really soon, so don't bother. So that's our password. So this is our SQL Azure connection string.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only part that has to do with SQL Azure out of the rest of the web config, because the rest of it is using the standard SQL provider. So they're the normal ones that you use against SQL Server. They work fine against SQL Azure, because as we said, it's only that setup step that's different. Mm-hmm. And then the connection string looks a little bit different, but you just get that from the portal. So once you have the right connection string, it's just something that will look very familiar to everybody. Let's take the role provider first, role manager. I'm going to take the one that we were using, which is the table storage provider. I'm going to comment it out, and we're going to replace it with this one, which just is SQL provider, system.web.security.sql, role provider. So this is the one that's included in the box. This is a part of ASP.NET.
So we actually don't have to package this one up and copy it local.
Right. There's no extra code for this. This is part of the .NET framework. You've already got this. And the membership provider is the same.
Right.
And so we're going to do the same process here. We're going to comment this out. We're going to paste in the new one, and let's be bold and press F5 and hope for the best. So this is now pointing again. Remember, Ryan already created some users and had some albums and things like that. The data for that may still be lying around because we haven't reset the storage system, but the roles and the membership stuff has been totally reset because we're pointing at a brand new database that doesn't have any data in it.
Correct.
So I can't log in now here because there's no user to log in as.
If you tried to log in, for instance, as Dunnery, it wouldn't find you.
Right, right. So I'm going to register instead, and I'm going to just register a new user. I'm going to call myself Smarks, smarks@smarks.com. a super secure password. Smarks's photos. Hey, I've done this before. Okay. We're going to register there. New user exists. I'm in here. I can go create a new album.
Upload
is probably what I want to do. I'm going to upload a picture. What can we do? Sample pictures. Desert. I love this one. It's awesome. That's more of a description, isn't it? What the title says. Tags are for wusses. So we're going to upload
it,
this
watch
one.
Watch it doesn't work because you didn't put a tag.
Because I didn't put a tag. No, I've tried it before, I swear. There you go. Thumbnail done. Functionality sort of back where we were. If I log out, and I love this about this sample. If I create a user called admin, I'm an admin because that's how Ryan implemented the security.
Hey, it works.
So that's actually going to, now we're exercising the roles provider also. And so you're seeing that I can now see all the photos, all the albums by all the different users. I can delete any of them. I'm once again admin, which means roles are working correctly too. So this is now running against SQL Azure. And I didn't change any of the code. Remember, Ryan was showing where we actually called into the membership provider, where we called the role provider, how we checked that the right user was logged in. None of that changes because that is generic. That's the idea of the providers. You can plug in any back end that you want. Mm-hmm. We were using tables. Now we're using SQL Azure. The choice is yours what to use. We should note that session state is not officially supported in with SQL Azure.
Right.
I think that the reason for that is because like with table storage, actually, old sessions don't get expired in the SQL Azure version of this because that relies on some scheduled stored procedures, right? So it requires the job scheduler, the SQL agent in SQL Server. SQL Azure doesn't have that. It can't do those scheduled things. And so your sessions will sort of never expire. So that's why session state is not officially supported using SQL Azure.
So the differences again, there's slight differences only in the fact that the table provider, you obviously have to ship the binaries yourself. You're compiling essentially the providers. And then in this case, we're using out of box. The only thing we did was really configure that database that would have been done automatically by tooling had it been like a SQL Express or a SQL Server, right? And those are the big differences. The other thing to keep in mind here is just the differences on how the storage systems work, really. And right now, the way SQL Azure works is you pay by database. You don't pay by the activity to a database.
Right.
So this could be, and you'd have to test it. There's no guarantee on this. This could be a really good way if you had lots and lots of transactions because essentially the transactions to get session or a membership or anything like that are going to be, I'll put in air quotes, free because they're not metered that way.
Right.
Whereas opposed to table storage, you would be paying a transaction cost. And depending on how many transactions you're doing, that could add up.
Right. And the flip side of that is probably around, table storage, you know what to expect in terms of performance per partition, per table, and things like that. So you pay for those transactions, but you know what you'll be capable of doing and what you won't. SQL Azure, a little fuzzier on how many transactions will you be able to actually do.
Right.
At what point will you get throttled or will things just start to get slow or things. So there's almost no way to really figure this out without trying it and actually seeing what comes out of that.
Right.
Measure the things that you're paying for. Measure the things that you care about for performance.
Yeah.
Come at the end of with a conclusion of what to use. You might even split and put some provider in one place and some in the other.
You could totally split.
There's nothing that says you have to do it one way or the other. You can also completely invent your own system that does this yourself because the provider model says, hey, look, if you can write code that implements this rather simple interface, then you can do it. So you can open up the table storage sample and change it however you want,
exactly.
Decide to do something different, up to you. But these are a couple of the good options for doing it.
So now the reason we covered the table provider model was because I believe it was Samantha J. Billinger from Montana had actually requested via our Twitter account, which is, again, Cloud Cover Show, had requested for us to cover that. So in the future, if you have a feature that you really want us to cover, and it's possible to cover within a reasonable time frame on the show, like the theory of, computing is probably not a reasonable topic, how to implement table storage providers and SQL Azure providers.
That one we can do. Yep.
Right.
Let us know.
We will be glad to take a look at that and see if we can put it into the show for you. Now, That being said, I believe it is time to...
It's about time.
To do what we always do, which is provide a tip. Sometimes we like to call it of the week. And in that case, it's a tip, Steve, that we provide weekly.
Yeah.
Okay. Since we're being very clear about things, I don't want people to say, well, how come the tip of the week didn't happen like three times?
Yeah.
This week.
Because it's the tip of the week. So to introduce the tip of the week, we always ask our editor, Bob, to do something. And, you know, this tip is actually, we're going to see in the code, this is about creating models for your table. And so I thought it's only appropriate if we do something modeling related. Mm-hmm. So I thought, Bob, if you would just, you know, take me and Ryan, put us on the cover of your favorite magazine as the models that we are in our spare time.
Yep.
Put that in. That would be a great introduction to the tip of the week, I think. So with that, here's your tip of the week.
Okay, so I'm going to open up Visual Studio here, and let's go ahead and stop debugging again. Take a look at some of the code. The tip of the week, again, is on declaring models. Now, this caveat comes up, actually, because of an inconsistency, maybe even a bug, in Windows Azure Dev Fabric Table Emulation. Dev storage.
Tables within development storage that doesn't work exactly the same way as the cloud.
Yeah.
Behind all this is because there's, you know, a SQL backend when you run locally.
Right.
And in the cloud, it's something totally different.
Yeah.
So there are a few gotchas that are sort of documented on this. This is one that can trip you up.
It can totally trip you up. And the reason is if you take a look actually at the album controller. I believe that's one of the first things that is actually invoked on this. And it's like, let's take a look here. It's the get that I believe is actually invoked. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it does a search for a default album, the index here. So you'll notice that we have this hack. We're doing a workaround for local dev storage called initialize local table schema. The reason is because when you do a repository get album, which in this case returns an actual album, you do a query, and it looks something like this. This isn't the exact query, but it's pretty close. There's this link statement that essentially puts together, if you're familiar with table storage, it puts together a query that says, hey, match the album with the album ID passed in and the title according to this, and then return one of the entities. Well, what happens is if that schema for an album has not been created before, and again, this is only the local dev storage for tables, you're going to get this error. It's going to essentially throw like a null reference. And the reason is it just doesn't know how to find an object that has never existed before and has no idea what the schema could have looked
like. It's the schema, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is going to get translated into some query about properties, and it has no knowledge of those properties, and this results in an error. Now you may not hit this yourself, you may not have seen this before, because if you insert something before you do the query and it has all the properties that you query on, then the properties are known. When you do the query, it just works. The problem comes up in this sort of an application where before any initialization has happened, it's just an empty table. You do a query that specifies an actual property, right? And so we've seen this come up. I mean, customers have asked about this on the forum. It's come up a few times. Not a lot, actually. So I think that most people are just inserting something before they do that, or they're just running.
Or they're just running against
cloud storage, where this cloud storage doesn't care about schema at all. Makes no difference, right? But this may trip you up. And Ryan has a pretty unique solution to deal with this.
So if you take a look at our ASP provider sample, because this can occur. What we're going to try to do this is true for the providers as well as the actual implementation we have here for Fluffy Photos itself.
Right.
So I'm going to show you an example of what we did for the table provider. However, this equally applies to any object model that you create yourself. And so what we did was we have an extension method in here that essentially when you do a create table, if it doesn't exist, it's going to try to do this initialized table schema from entity. And basically, it only does that for the loopback address, because then we know it's the local dev storage.
Right, because it's unnecessary to do this in the cloud. You could.
Right.
This wouldn't break anything, but it's sort
exactly.
of a waste.
So let's see. Control-Shift-Enter. Nope.
There you go. Alt-Shift-Enter.
Yeah, there we go. So if you take a look, though, at what we have here is in the create models from table, what we've done is we're essentially looking for anything that is a table service entity. So for every table, we loop through every table, and then we find everything that is a table service entity that matches to those
right.
properties that you're going to have. And then we call this initialize table schema from entity, which is this bad boy right here. And all we're doing there is we're getting the generic arguments using reflection. And you'll notice we're doing an add, a save, a delete, and a save.
Right.
So we're going to go and find one of everything, insert it into the table, and then delete
with all
it.
The properties, but with
properties,
default values,
yeah.
right? And then delete it again. That primes the schema
exactly.
so that all the properties are known. Now you can do whatever you want.
Exactly.
It's
going
to work the way you expect it to. So pretty cool. It's a hack, but I think it's a pretty nice hack
yeah.
for this. It's good. It's in the table provider, the copy of that that's in the Fluffy Photos
yeah.
sample, right? So this is, if you just get the sample out of the box, the table storage provider's sample,
mm-hmm.
You won't find this bit of code, and so you might run into issues like this or something like that. But if you're interested in kind of how this works, go look at the Fluffy Photos stuff. It's basically just an extension method that you've
yep.
defined, right? So you can go use that yourself.
Yeah.
I think it's a good solution. It's a good workaround for it. You obviously don't need it in the cloud, so you can rip it all back out once you're live, or you can do as Ryan did and check for if this is development storage. If it's a loopback address, that means development storage. Do this, otherwise skip it. And
right.
and so it's not going to hurt your application that's running in the cloud. There's no performance penalty. There's no, you know, you're
exactly.
just doing this for dev storage.
And so we did some, I mean, that was the more sophisticated approach, was check to see if it's looped
yep.
back, do this reflection. Then there's the quick and dirty way, which is what we did here for Fluffy Photos, for the actual objects themselves, like albums,
for the albums
and photos
yeah.
and things like that within Fluffy Photos. We actually did this initialize local table schema, and basically there's a try-catch around something that would throw, in this case get albums would throw if it didn't,
right.
nothing was there. And so what we do is create an album and delete an album. And we
right.
just send in
I
just
see.
Bogus
so you try to get albums. If it doesn't work, then that means, hey, it's
there
probably dev storage and it wasn't initialized.
Correct. And then and
add
then
one, remove it.
Right. And then, you know, again, this is a hack.
Yeah.
We're not super proud of this, and we only did this because it's a sample.
Right.
Had it been anything else, we would run a provisioning script that would take care of this automatically.
Yep.
And also we have to keep in mind that this does not happen in the cloud at all.
Yep.
This is only for local development storage.
Yep.
Okay.
So that's it. I think that'll do it for the show. Be sure to send us a message on Twitter if there's something you'd like us to cover, or if you just want to
yep.
give us feedback about the show. We are at Cloud Cover Show
and that's
on Twitter.
Steven Archibald Marks.
Steve Marks, and that is Ryan Dunn.
Mm-hmm.
And although this is the most confusing, we switched back and forth so much in this episode. It's the most confusing way to keep track of who's who.
Yep.
Steve. Ryan. So until next time, bye.
Thanks.